At breakfast, Faye said that she would be ready to go in another half hour or so. When they had finished eating, Frank, Salty, and Bill Kitson, who had apologized for showing up late for breakfast because of some chore, went out to the corral to get their horses ready to ride. Hal Embry followed them with a worried frown on his face.
If Faye had said anything to me about this loco idea, I would have tried to talk her out of it.
Going to town to buy supplies isn't that loco. It's just the circumstances that make it a risky thing to do.
We could get by without the supplies. It's just that my sister gets bored easily. She always has. Salty, do you mind handling the wagon team? Hey, have you ever driven one before?
Have I ever driven a wagon before? Son, I've handled every kind of wagon from a buckboard to a prairie schooner. I wrestled stagecoaches thousands of miles over every sort of terrain you can think of. I fought engines and road agents and mudslides and snowstorms and tornadoes. There ain't any kind of four-wheeled vehicle I can't handle.
I'll take your word for it. But you never drove one with my sister sitting beside you telling you everything you're doing wrong.
I like a good challenge.
You'll get one.
Frank had a saddle on Goldie, and Wolf was waiting with him when Faye emerged from the house. She wore a long-sleeved white shirt, a brown divided riding skirt, brown boots, and a flat-crowned brown hat with it strapped tight under her chin. Frank thought she was as pretty as she could be. Judging by the expression on his face, so did Bill Kitson. But the young cowboy turned his head and looked away as he sat on his horse waiting to leave for Pine Knob.
Are you bound and determined to do this, Faye?
Of course I am. It's going to be fine. Nothing will happen to me as long as I have Mr. Morgan with me.
Give me a minute. I'll saddle up and come along with you.
That's not necessary. Father needs you and the man to start moving the stock down from the higher pastures. You know that.
It can wait. Anyway, Gage and the boys don't need me to handle a chore like that.
You know what Father wants done better than anyone else. Just go on and do your work. Stop worrying about me.
Easier said than done.
But Hal stepped back with his hands in his hip pockets as Faye climbed to the wagon seat next to Salty.
You're gonna handle the reins?
Yes, if that's all right with you. Your brother asked me to.
I suppose that's fine. I could do it, but I don't really care.
Frank swung up into the saddle.
Is your dog coming with us?
I thought I'd take him along. He doesn't like being cooped up either.
Well, if he gets tired, he can ride in the back of the wagon.
Thanks, miss.
Mary Embry stepped onto the porch to wave goodbye as they rode away. Frank thought the woman looked worried, and with good cause. Faye had a wild streak in her to go along with her stubbornness, and that was a combination that would put plenty of gray hair on a parent's head. Frank rode to the right of the wagon, Kitson to the left on a horse that looked a bit used already. Wolf bounded ahead. The trail to Pine Knob passed through several thick stands of trees and along stretches cut through low, rocky ridges. Frank was especially watchful while they were traveling along those places because they were good spots for an ambush. Nothing happened, however, and by late morning the small group was approaching the settlement. Frank thought that maybe Faye had been right about there not being any danger, but he wasn't convinced of it yet. The wagon rolled into town, flanked by the two riders and the big cur. The saloons on the western side of Pine Knob weren't busy at all. A few horses were tied in front of Corrigan's, and the hitch racks in front of the popular saloon were empty. Evidently, the crew from the B-Star wasn't in town today. After the wagon rattled across the bridge, Salty angled the vehicle toward the Pine Knob Emporium, and at Faye's direction, it pulled up in front of the store's high porch that also served as a loading dock.
You man can do whatever you want. Mr. Crandall's clerks can load the supplies. When I'm finished with the shopping, I plan to have dinner at the feed barn. You can join me if you'd like, or I'll meet you back here in a couple of hours.
Thanks, miss. Driving is thirsty work, so I might take on a little lubrication while we're here.
Don't get drunk. I'll leave you here if you're soused.
Well, I never said nothing about getting drunk. I can handle my liquor. Anyway, I don't plan on down to more than two or three mugs of beer. That ain't enough to get a horsefly drunk.
Just remember what I told you.
If that don't beat all.
Salty tied the reins around the brake lever, then climbed down from the wagon.
She tends to be a mite bossy. Sometimes more than a mite. But I guess when you're the boss's daughter, you get used to people hopping when you say jump.
Frank figured Kitson's attitude was one reason things hadn't gone any further than they had between him and Faye. But that was none of his business, Frank reminded himself.
Somebody needs to keep an eye on her anyway. I'll do that. Wolf, stay with the wagon. Salty, you go on and get those beers you wanted. Bill, you can go with Salty or stay here with me.
Daggummit, now I got me a dilemma. Miss Faye says she's gonna have dinner at the feed barn, and you know how much I like to grub at that place, Frank. I sure am thirsty, too.
Why not go get a drink, then come back to the feed barn for dinner? I'll come with you.
By golly, if that ain't a brilliant idea. I like this young fella, Frank. He got a head on his shoulders, by gum.
You two go ahead, then. Miss Faye and I'll be over at the feed barn later.
Salty and Kitson set off toward the western side of town. Frank turned and went into the emporium. He hooked his thumbs in his belt and ambled along the aisles between the shelves of merchandise. A general store in a cow town like Pine Knob had to carry a little bit of everything, and Crandall's place was no exception. From castor oil to lilac water, from tenpenny nails to delicate bows, from Colt revolvers to bottles of ink, the emporium had it all, along with barrels full of crackers, pickles, sugar, flour, and salt. Farm implements, saddles, and hats hung from hooks on the walls. There was even a small butcher shop tucked into a rear corner of the store. A couple of women were browsing in one of the aisles. They gave Frank sidelong glances of disapproval, as if this was their domain and a grizzled old gunfighter had no place in it. They were probably right about that, he reflected. But he wasn't the only one who didn't meet with their approval. They cast the same sort of veiled looks at Faye, who stood at the rear counter talking to a short, bald-headed man in an apron. Frank figured he was probably Crandall, the proprietor. For a moment, Frank was puzzled about why the ladies from Pine Knob would be glaring at Faye like that. Then he remembered how gossip spread in small towns. More than likely, the women had heard about how Faye liked to bathe naked in that waterfall and had been caught at it by Royal and Dobbs, and small-mindedly blamed her for letting the men see her unclothed. Faye glared at him.
I'm perfectly fine in here, Mr. Morgan. Why don't you go back outside? I'll call you if I need you.
Frank looked around. The emporium had a back door, but with the front doors open, he figured he could wait right outside and get back inside in a hurry if there was any trouble.
All right, Miss Embry.
When he stepped onto the porch, he looked both ways along the street as he rubbed Wolf's ears. Marshal Roy Trask was coming toward him along the boardwalk in front of several other businesses.
Morgan, what are you doing in town?
Miss Embry needed some things for her and her mother. Salty and one of the hands and I came to town with her.
Bodyguards, huh?
Just keeping an eye on her.
Probably not a bad idea. Even though I haven't seen your young son or anybody else from the B-Star in the town for the past few days.
What about Baldridge and Mrs. Wilcoxon?
Nope. I reckon they're sticking pretty close to the ranch. I suppose it's too much to hope for that both sides in the feud have decided to wait and let the courts sort it out.
It's possible.
But you wouldn't count on it.
No, I wouldn't count on it.
Well, keep it out of my town.
Faye came out of the store a few minutes later carrying a small bag. Frank started to take it from her, but she shook her head and placed it in the back of the wagon herself.
Mr. Crandall and his clerk will load everything else in a little while. We can go on over to the feed barn.
Salty and Bill said they'd meet us there later.
What Bill Kitson does is no concern of mine.
Faye went down the steps and started toward the cafe. Frank waved for Wolf to come with them, then caught up to her easily. Wolf trailed along behind, then found some shade to curl up under. A few townspeople sat at the counter when they came in, but Salty and Kitson weren't there yet. Frank assumed that Faye would want to sit at one of the tables, but she went straight to the counter and took one of the stools. She and Katie Storm greeted each other coolly. Frank knew that Katie thought Hal ought to stand up more often to assist her. Maybe Faye knew that, too. Frank sat down on the stool beside her and thumbed back his hat.
Hello, Miss Storm.
Mr. Morgan, how are you?
Fine, thanks. Ready for some of those fine victuals that your uncle dishes up?
I'll tell him to fix a couple of plates for you and Miss Embry.
She went through the swinging door into the kitchen. Frank turned his head to say something to Faye. Without even thinking, Frank was on his feet and heading for the door. He rammed it open with his shoulder and drew his Colt at the same time. As he charged into the kitchen, his keen eyes instantly saw Katie struggling in the grip of a man who looked vaguely familiar, while nearby on the floor lay Solomon Storm, his head covered with blood. Frank's gun came up, and he was about to shout at the man to let go of Katie when the whole world came crashing down on the back of his skull. Frank welcomed the pain in his head because it told him he was still alive. He had been knocked unconscious before, so he knew the stabbing agony would soon subside to a dull ache. He could live with that.
He's coming around. Dadgummit, Frank, you had me scared for a minute there. You was dead.
Frank pried his eyes open and saw the worried, whiskery face of Salty Stevens looming over him. He glanced the other way and saw Bill Kitson, but he didn't see Faye, and concern for her safety prompted him to haul himself upright into a sitting position.
Oh, where's Miss Embry?
She was gone when we got here, Frank. So was Katie. And poor Solomon there's been walloped bad on the head.
Frank looked over and saw Solomon still lying senseless on the floor near the stove. Frank could see now what he hadn't caught in that brief glimpse. There was a cut on the old man's head above his ear where someone had hit him.
Who was it, Mr. Morgan? Did you get a look at him?
One of them. The other one was behind the door and hit me with what felt like an anvil.
More than likely the butt of a gun or a chunk of stove wood.
Doesn't matter what it was. He knocked me out, and then the two of them must have grabbed Faye and Katie. The one I saw was familiar, and now I remember where I saw him before. He was with Brady Morgan and the rest of the B-Star bunch the day of the inquest.
Jehoshaphat! What in the blazes does Baldridge think he's going to accomplish by kidnapping Miss Faye?
I don't know, but I sure as hell intend to find out. Help me up.
As the three men came out of the kitchen, Marshal Trask hurried into the cafe through the front door.
I heard there was a heap of trouble down here. What's going on?
Somebody attacked Solomon Storm and abducted his niece and Faye Embry.
Abducted? You mean kidnapped?
That's exactly what I mean. There were at least two of them. They must have snuck into the kitchen through the alley door and knocked out Solomon. Then when Katie came in, she let out a scream and I charged in after her. One of the varmints walloped me, and that's the last I knew until I woke up a couple of minutes ago.
Well, you couldn't have been out long. It's only been a few minutes since one of the customers who was in here ran into my office and told me there was trouble. I got here as fast as I could. The man said he heard Katie scream, then you ran in here, and then Miss Embry went through the kitchen door after you. That's all he knew, because he lit a shuck out of here and went to fetch me. Anybody see who did this?
Baldridge's man. At least the one I saw rides for the B-Star. So I reckon the others do, too.
That's a mighty serious accusation, Morgan. No matter how Gaius Baldridge feels about the Boxed E, I can't imagine him ordering the kidnapping of two young women.
They probably weren't after Katie. Maybe they just grabbed her to use as an extra hostage if they needed her. But I know for sure the man I saw struggling with her was one of Baldridge's gun wolves.
What are you going to do about it, Marshal? You can't let Baldridge get away with this. He sent his man into your town to kidnap Embry's daughter.
He's not going to get away with this. I'll ride out to the B-Star and get to the bottom of it.
You won't go by yourself. I'm coming along, too.
And me.
Me, too.
All right, but I'm in charge, dammit. No going off half-cocked, understand? Somebody go fetch Doc Hutchinson. Solomon Storm needs help.
He's already on his way, Marshal.
Bert, you've got a good horse. Ride out to the Box D as fast as you can and let Jubal Embry know what's happened. Oh, that's probably not a good idea. This whole valley's about to blow up.
Laura was at the window of her room on the second floor of the B-Star Ranch House when she saw Brady riding fast toward the house. Early this morning, he had ridden out with three men to put their plan into action. That plan had been conceived hastily after their visitor showed up in the wee hours of the morning. But Laura reviewed it numerous times, and as far as she could tell, it was solid and ought to work. Now Brady was returning, and Laura hoped he brought news of the planned success. If he did, they were one step closer to getting what they wanted. Laura left the room and hurried down the broad staircase to the first floor. The B-Star Ranch House was a huge affair made of rocks, timbers, and thick beams. Inside, its sumptuous furnishings had been brought from far-off cities like Denver, St. Louis, and San Francisco. Gaius Baldridge was a man who liked his comforts. She found Baldridge waiting on the wide gallery that ran all around the house. He stood tensely, his hands gripping the rail at the edge of the porch.
Brady is coming back.
I know. I saw him from upstairs.
Brady reined his lathered horse to a stop in front of the house and swung down from the saddle. He still had the plaster over his broken nose, but the black eyes had faded, and he didn't look as grotesque as he had a few days earlier when they came back from Pine Knob. He wore a savage grin as he came up the steps to the gallery, and when Laura saw that, her heart leaped. She knew he wouldn't be grinning if things hadn't gone well.
Is it done?
Carter, Felton, and Kern had the Ember girl at the Lion Shack.
They brought Katie Storm along, too.
Well, Katie Storm? They weren't supposed to take her, just Faye Embry.
The Storm girl caught them right after they knocked out the old man. She put up a fight, and Kern had to knock her out before they grabbed Faye. They figured they might as well bring her along, too. Actually, that works out pretty good for us. Hal Embry is sweet on Katie. He'll be even crazier when he finds out that both his sister and his sweetheart have been carried off.
Well, I suppose that's all right. Anyway, it's too late to do anything about it now, isn't it?
Damn right it's too late. There's no turning back. By nightfall, Jubal Embry and his son and all the men who ride for them will be dead.
What about Frank?
That's the only place where Cotter and the other fellas fell down on the job. Cotter knocked him out in the kitchen of the feed barn. He might have busted the old man's skull, but he's not sure because Katie and Faye got spooked and he hustled out of there without checking to make sure Frank was dead.
But he might be.
Yeah, sure, that was the idea, wasn't it?
The young women aren't to be harmed. Your men are aware of that, Brady.
Sure. I'll see to it myself, boss.
I wish it hadn't been necessary to take these steps.
But it is. Soon we'll have everything we want, Gaius. Everything.
I'd feel better about this if there were 40 of us, not 4.
Marshal Roy Trask approached the Beastar headquarters with Frank, Salty, and Kitson.
We could have waited for Embry and the rest of the Box D crew.
I was in no mood to wait. Were you, Morgan?
Not hardly.
This was the first time Frank had been to the Beastar. It was a fine-looking spread with plenty of good grazing land, and it was big enough for Baldridge to run a large herd. What Baldridge had here ought to be enough for any man. He had never understood why some men always had to have more, whether it was land, cattle, money, or women. The ranch house was big, not fancy, at least on the outside, but very impressive. As were the barns, the corrals, the blacksmith shop, the bunkhouse, and all the other buildings. The Beastar was no greasy sack outfit. It was as fine a spread as Frank had seen in this part of the country. No one challenged them as they rode up to the house. Frank knew they had been spotted approaching, though, because as soon as they reined in, Gaius Baldridge and Brady Morgan stepped out and onto the porch. Brady still had the plaster on his broken nose, and the murderous glare he directed toward Frank said that he was still packing a grudge, too.
Good afternoon, Marshal. What brings you out here?
I reckon you know why I'm here, Mr. Baldridge. We've come for Miss Embry and Miss Storm. Turn them over to us now, unharmed, and maybe there won't be as much trouble over this as there will be otherwise.
I'm afraid I don't know what you're talking about. I assume you're talking about Faye Embry, but I know of no reason why she would be here. And Miss Storm? You're talking about the young lady who runs the cafe in town?
You know dang well who—
One of your men knocked out Katie's uncle in the kitchen of the feed barn earlier today and attacked Katie. I saw him with my own eyes.
You must not see very good anymore, old man. Nobody's been off the Beastar all day. Isn't that right, Mr. Baldridge?
That's the truth. All of my men are accounted for.
You're lying. The man I saw has shaggy brown hair, a drooping mustache, and a scar over his left eye. He was with you at the inquest, Brady.
Baldridge and Brady looked at each other in apparent surprise.
That's Vince Cotter. You're right. He rode for the Beastar, but he doesn't anymore. He quit yesterday along with 2 other men, Felton and Kern. They said it was getting too damn boring around here. They were tired of waiting for some action.
You sure about that? These men left the ranch?
They drew their pay and rode out. I have no idea where they are now or what they might have done since then.
You expect us to believe a cock and bull story like that?
I think that old mossback just called you a liar, boss. And I know the other old mossback did.
Take it easy. We're just trying to get to the bottom of this. You're saying these men rode into Pine Knob today and kidnapped those women?
I have no idea what they might have done, Marshal. But it makes sense. They didn't get the payoff they wanted out of this job. Perhaps they decided to kidnap Miss Embry and hold her for ransom. You say the abduction occurred at the cafe?
That's right.
Then taking Miss Storm along was probably just a spur-of-the-moment thing. Do you have any idea where Carter and the others might have gone?
Wait just a damn minute. You intend to help these varmints?
I don't want any harm to come to those 2 young women. If we can help these men find them, I think we should.
I rode with Carter and Felton and Kern before. I'm not going to send some posse breeding down their necks.
If you know where they might have taken those women, tell me. That's an order, Brady.
Fine. If that's the way you want it. I don't know if that's where they went or not, but I remember Carter saying something about an old line shack up in the mountains north of here that your crew doesn't use anymore. He said it would make a good hideout if anybody ever needed one. I thought he was just making conversation.
Maybe he was, then. But if he and the others are on the run, perhaps he remembered it. I think I know the line shack Brady and the others are talking about. I can tell you how to find it. Better yet, I'll send Brady and some of the men with you to show you.
Do you know these mountains, Marshal?
I'm afraid I don't. I didn't grow up in these parts. Since my jurisdiction ends at the town limits, I've never explored the rest of the valley that much.
You'll need a guide. I'll go myself if that'll make you feel better, Marshal.
Jubal Embry and his men are probably on their way here already. We need to wait for them.
That's not a good idea. There are four of us. We can handle three kidnappers.
Blast it! If Embry comes charging in and we're not here to tell him what's going on, he's liable to shoot first and ask questions later. We're trying to prevent a war, not start one, Morgan.
That's a good point, Marshal. If Jubal were to attack the B-Star, my men would fight back, I assure you. If we wait and are able to talk some sense into him, then a combined force will be so overwhelming that Carter and the others will have no choice but to surrender and release the young women without harming them.
If they ain't been harmed already, you mean?
I'm sure they're all right. As long as those men believe they can collect a ransom from Miss Embry, they won't hurt her.
It's settled then. We'll wait here for Jubal, then head off for that line shack and see if those varmints are there.
Why don't you come inside and get out of the sun? No one has ever said that Gaius Baldridge is inhospitable, and I don't intend for them to start.
Might as well.
The four riders dismounted, tied their horses to a hitching post in front of the gallery, and went up the steps into the shade.
Please, come inside. I'll have something cool to drink brought to you.
Salty and Kitson looked uneasy as they stepped into Baldridge's house, Frank noted. It was sort of like venturing into the lion's den. Although he didn't really think they were walking into a trap, he made sure that his hand didn't stray far from the butt of his gun. As they entered the living room, Laura came toward them looking cool and beautiful in a cream-colored dress. Her face wore a concerned frown.
I heard what you were talking about out there on the gallery. Is it true, Gaius? Some of your men kidnapped Faye Embry?
Men who worked for me until recently. I had nothing to do with this, my dear. I can't be held responsible for what someone does after he leaves my employ.
Oh, no, I suppose not. I just hate to see all this violence going on in such a beautiful place as this valley.
It'll be over soon. You have my word on that.
I hope you're right about that, Mr. Baldridge. This trouble has gone on long enough. And if you and Jubal Embry weren't so blasted hard-headed, it could have been settled by now.
You speak bluntly, Marshal, but you speak the truth.
As Baldridge spoke, a Mexican woman entered the room carrying a tray with several glasses of what appeared to be lemonade on it. The servant handed them out.
To the successful recovery of those unfortunate young women, and to the end of the hostilities in this valley as well. Perhaps if we can bring Miss Embry home safely, her father will see we don't need to be enemies after all.
I'll drink to that.
Frank found himself sitting in a comfortable armchair while they waited for the rest of the Box D crew to arrive. Laura came over and took the chair beside him. Baldridge and Trask were on the other side of the room, talking quietly together near the massive stone fireplace, while Salty and Bill Kitson were checking out the collection of animal heads mounted on another wall.
Are you all right, Frank? I heard the marshal say that you were attacked as well when Miss Embry was kidnapped.
I'm fine. I was knocked out, but just for a few minutes. My head's too hard to get a permanent dent from a gun butt.
I remember just how hard-headed you can be when you want to. I know you didn't mean it exactly like that, but it still applies.
I suppose it does. Where did Brady go?
Well, I think he's upstairs. I hate to admit it, but he's not very comfortable around you, Frank. Oh, shoot, I should have done things differently while he was growing up. I know that. I still wish things were better between the two of you, but I suppose there's no hope for that.
Not much.
I hope you can see now that Gaius isn't the terrible man everyone makes him out to be. He's really worried about Faye Embry, even though her father is trying to steal Gaius's range from him. When this is over, I'm sure that if you asked him, he could find a place for you here.
That's not gonna happen. I'm playing out the hand the way it was dealt. And when it's over, Salty and I will be moving on. We never intended to stay in this valley.
Well, where are you going?
Mexico. We're taking our time about it, but we'll get there.
I hope you do, Frank. I hope you do.
It wasn't long after that that a rumble of approaching hoofbeats was heard through the open door. Frank stood up and joined the other men who started for the gallery. A cloud of dust rolled up behind the galloping riders. From the looks of the packed mass of horsemen, Embry had brought every member of the Box D crew he could find. There were close to 24 men charging toward the B-Star Ranch House. Marshal Trask went down to the bottom step and held up a hand in a signal for the riders to stop.
Galloway, Trask! We're gonna turn that house into a damn sieve!
Hold your fire! Settle down, Jubal!
Settle down! By God, how can you tell me to settle down? Those no-good skunks have stolen my daughter!
Frank, what are you and Salty and Bill doing up there with them? Are they holding you hostage?
You see this gun on my hip? Nobody's holding me hostage, Hal. You and your father had better listen to what Trask has to say.
Mr. Morgan is right, Jubal.
You shut up, you damn range hog. There wouldn't be any trouble in this valley if it wasn't for you.
Just listen to me for a minute. Tell your men to take their hands off their guns and listen.
Relax, boys. Hold your fire for now. But Trask, if you've got something to say, you better talk fast.
All right. We know who took your daughter in Katie Storm.
So do we! Baldridge's men.
No, men who worked for me, but they don't now. They quit and rode off yesterday, Jubal. They weren't acting on my orders when they kidnapped poor Faye. I give you my word on that.
As best we can figure, they kidnapped Miss Embry thinking they'd hold her for ransom. And we have a pretty good idea where they're holed up, too.
That's loco. I don't believe it.
It's true. Think about it, Jubal. These men... Well, I have to admit, even though I hired them to help protect my ranch, some of them proved to be less than trustworthy. To put it bluntly, they're a little more than outlaws.
Now you realize that?
Those three men drew their time and rode on yesterday. I'm not responsible for what they might have done today.
You're responsible for them being in the valley in the first place.
That's true, and that's why I'm going to help you get Faye back safely, along with Miss Storm. I and some of my men will ride with you and take you to the line shack where those men are hiding with their prisoners.
And we're supposed to trust you? Why in blazes should we?
Because I think I know where your sister is, Hal, and I'm willing to take you to her. I wouldn't do that if I were behind her kidnapping, would I?
Embry and Hal glanced at each other. They didn't have an answer for Baldridge's question.
We're wasting time here, Baldridge. How long will it take to get to that line shack you're talking about?
It's been several years since I've been there, but I think we can make it in a couple of hours. We should get there before dark, but you're right, Marshal. We don't have any time to waste. What's it going to be, Jubal? Do we go and rescue your daughter, or do we kill each other and leave her in the hands of those desperados?
All right, blast it. I still don't trust you a lick, Baldridge, but I'll go along with you, for now. But if this is a trick, you'll be mighty sorry.
I'll fetch Brady and he can get his men. We'll be ready to ride in 10 minutes.
Better not be any longer than that. We'll know you're up to something.
Frank?
Frank turned toward her. She stepped out onto the porch. Salty and Kitson had gone down into the ranch yard to untie their horses, and Trask was talking to Jubal and Hal Embry. That meant Frank and Laura were alone on the porch for the moment.
I just wanted to tell you to be careful. I don't know what will happen up there where you're going, but I'm sure it'll be dangerous.
Life is dangerous. Even when you do everything you're supposed to, sometimes things don't work out.
You're talking about the two of us, aren't you?
The two of us? Brady, everything we've gone through over the past 20-odd years, I suppose.
If you had known then what you know now, would you have done anything differently?
That question has been plaguing everybody since the dawn of time, I reckon. And I don't have an answer for it any more than most folks do.
Well, I know what my answer would be.
Before she could elaborate, Brady stalked out onto the porch and glared at the two of them.
Let's go. We got things to do.
I reckon that's true. I'll see you when we get back.
I'll be watching for you.
Brady Morgan and 6 other men from the B-Star joined the group of Box D riders headed for the mountains on the trail of the kidnappers. The other members of Baldridge's crew were out tending to their ranch duties, too far from headquarters to summon. Baldridge and Embry both urged their horses to the front of the group. They were flanked by Brady and Hal, and just behind came Frank, Trask, and Salty. Bill Kitson had fallen back with the other Box D hands.
My men used to use this line shack we're looking for when I had herds grazing in the highest pastures during the summer. I stopped doing that several years ago because it was simply too much trouble to fetch the animals down every fall, and too many of them got lost up here in that rugged country. I have plenty of ranges just as good down lower. Of course, when I was able to graze my stock anywhere I wanted, even west of Local Creek, it was much easier.
There's still room enough for both of us. The valley is plenty big.
Don't pretend to be the voice of reason, Jubal. It doesn't suit you.
Now how about this, Baldridge? Your herd is bigger than ours. So let's say we lease you some range during the winter when you need it more.
What? What are you doing, son? I don't want to do business with this polecat.
Why not? The two of you used to get along all right. I've been thinking about it, and I don't see any reason why you can't work together again.
But we're suing each other!
Well, you wouldn't have to if you'd just come to an agreement. And Mr. Baldridge, you could admit that my pa's claim to the western half of the valley is legal. And pa, you could admit that we've got a little more range than we really need. Seems like it would work out better all around if you'd just cooperate.
He means if you just slink away with your tail between your legs like a whipped wolf, guys. Is that what you want to do?
No, of course not. I wouldn't let any man run roughshod over me.
Well, that's not what I was saying.
Forget it, boy. Thinking ain't never been your strong suit. You better leave that to me.
Actually, Frank thought, what Hal had proposed made a lot of sense. If Embry and Baldridge had been willing to go along with the idea, it would have solved a lot of the problems in the valley. Sure, the hard feelings between the two spreads would have taken some time to fade away, but eventually they would have. Brady had jabbed a sharp stick into Baldridge's pride before Baldridge could even give it any serious consideration, though. Brady didn't want peace in the valley. That would mean he was out of a job. The only way he would make a profit was if Baldridge and Embry stayed at each other's throats. A frown creased Frank's forehead as several bothersome thoughts stirred in his brain. He asked himself who else might have something to gain if the Box D and the B-Star were at war with each other. The answer was obvious, and while he didn't like it a bit, it didn't particularly surprise him either.
Oh, blast it, my horse has gone lame for some reason.
Are you sure, Frank? I didn't see nothing.
Yeah, I felt him pull up just now. I'd better check him over. Maybe he just picked up a stone in one of his shoes.
We don't have time for this, old man.
The rest of you go on. Salty, why don't you and Bill stay here with me and give me a hand? We'll catch up to the rest of you in a little while.
I don't like splitting up like this.
There are only three of those kidnappers. You got about 30 men. If 10-1 odds don't make them surrender, having three of us along isn't going to make any difference.
Sounds to me like the great Frank Morgan is trying to duck out of a fight. Maybe that reputation of his was just a mess of hot air all along.
Sonny, you don't know what you're talking about. Why, I've seen this man take on a whole passel of varmints single-handed.
Let it go, Salty. I don't care what Brady thinks.
You will one of these days, when it comes time for a showdown between you and me.
I don't know, Mr. Morgan. I think I ought to stay with the boss.
I just thought if you hung back with us for a little while, you could ride after the others and let them know if Salty and I have to turn back.
That makes sense. Stay here with Morgan and Stevens, Bill, until he sees how bad off his horse is.
Sure, boss. Whatever you say.
Frank dismounted and stood there holding the reins of his horse and fidgeting a little as he started examining each of Goldie's hooves in turn. The rest of the men rode off with Brady directing a disdainful glare toward Frank as they left.
I don't see nothing wrong so far, Frank. Goldie's pretty dependable, though, so if he tried to pull up, there must be something bothering him.
I'll find it, no matter how long it takes.
He noted that Kitson looked even more impatient at that comment.
Mighty pretty country around here. I don't reckon I've ever seen anything prettier, though, than Miss Faye standing under that waterfall with that water running all over her. How about you, Bill? You ever see anything like that?
Kitson ducked his head, but he couldn't completely hide the surprised frown that appeared on his face.
You've seen her like that, haven't you, Bill? I can tell by the look on your face.
I don't reckon I want to talk about that.
Come on, Bill. You're among friends. You and Faye were sweet on each other for a while. You went out there to that waterfall with her a few times, didn't you?
That's none of your business, Mr. Morgan.
Hell, son, it's nothing to be ashamed of. A couple of healthy young people like you two, there's nothing wrong with stripping down buck naked and romping a little in a pool like that.
That's not the way it was. I knew about that waterfall and wanted to go out there with her, but she wouldn't let me. I had to sneak out there to get a look at her, and she would...
He stopped short and stepped back with a look of apprehension on his face.
She caught you and told you that everything was over and done with between you. She probably called you a few choice names and threatened to tell her pa about what you'd done too, didn't she?
You... You don't know what you're talking about, Mr. Morgan?
I think I do. She was furious at you. Probably said all kinds of things that made you mad. But in the end, she promised not to say anything to Ambry. Now, you couldn't forget how humiliating it was to have her treat you like that, could you, Bill? You were still in love with her. But she didn't feel the same way anymore, and you couldn't stand that.
You don't know what it was like. Having to see her around the ranch all the time, knowing that she hated me now, knowing what we might have had together if I hadn't been so blasted stupid.
So to get even with her, you decided to sell out the Box D. You went over to Baldridge's side and started feeding information to Brady Morgan. Maybe you didn't mean to let it slip about Faye going out there to that waterfall, but you said something to plant the idea in Brady's brain. If Faye Ambry was raped and murdered by a couple of Baldridge's gun wolves, it would get a war started in this valley for sure.
No! No, I never meant for Faye to be hurt. He promised me...
You believed a snake like Brady Morgan?
He's your son!
That doesn't make him any less of a snake, or you for that matter. You slipped out of the bunkhouse last night and rode over to the B-Star, or wherever you met Brady, to pass along your information, and told him that Faye was going to Pine Knob today. As soon as he knew that, he hatched a plan to have her kidnapped. That gunman called Cotter and the other two. They never quit Baldridge. That was a lie. They're still working for him. And everything Brady and Baldridge said when we rode up was just an act.
I don't know anything about that.
Sure you do. You know Jubal and Hal Embry and the rest of the Box D crew are riding into a trap right now. It's all a double cross. The rest of Baldridge's gunnies are waiting up there in the mountains to ambush them and wipe them out.
Frank saw Laura's hand in this. She was cunning and she was ruthless, and she knew how to get what she wanted. She had probably been pulling Baldridge's strings from the start with Brady's help. Frank wasn't sure exactly what she hoped to gain from pitting Baldridge and Embry against each other, but if Baldridge wiped out his only rival and then married Laura and something was to happen to him after that, Laura could easily wind up owning the entire valley. There was more to it than that, Frank thought. And it probably had to do with the railroad, since Laura's late husband, Frederick Wilcoxon, had been involved with building spur lines all across the frontier. Laura might want to run such a line through the valley, and she stood to make a fortune if she controlled all the rights of way. Or rather, a bigger fortune, Frank thought, since she was already a wealthy woman. But would too much ever be enough where Laura was concerned? Those thoughts were racing through Frank's head, and they almost distracted him to the point that he didn't see Kitson suddenly grabbing for the gun on his hip.
I won't let you tell anybody!
Frank didn't reach for his gun. His right fist shot forward instead.
Good Lord, Frank. How in tarnation did you figure all that out? It's as tangled up as a skillet full of snakes.
Just put together a few things I saw and heard along the way. Keep them covered, Salty, while I tie them up. We don't want him getting away and trying to warn Brady and Baldridge.
Wait a minute. Did Goldie really go lame or not?
We better hope not, because we'll really have to light a shuck if we want to catch up to Embry and his men in time to stop him from riding into that ambush.
It didn't take long for Frank to lash Kitson's wrists and ankles together so securely that the young cowboy wouldn't be going anywhere until somebody came along and cut his bonds. Since they were out in the wilds of the B-Star Range, Frank decided it would be all right to leave Kitson without gagging him. There was no one around here to hear his shouts.
We'll come back to get you later.
Either that or you'll lay out here till you starve to death, you double-crossing polecat.
It'd be better if you just go ahead and shoot me. It's all I deserve after what I've done. A bunch of my friends are gonna wind up dead because of me.
More than likely. You should have thought about that before you let your head get all twisted up by that woman.
How are we going to find that line shack, Frank? Baldridge is the one who knows where it is.
They left enough sign. We can follow their trail. I got a hunch that when we get closer, we'll be able to tell where they are.
We'll hear the shooting, huh? There's a good chance you're right about that.
They pushed their horses hard in hopes of catching up to the men from the Box D before they reached the ambush. But Goldie and Salty's paint had already traveled quite a distance today, and there was only so much the horses could do. The mountains rose sharply along the northern edge of the valley with only a narrow band of foothills before the tree-covered slopes. A larger range with snow-capped peaks bulked to the northwest. The mountains bordering the valley were smaller, but still rugged. The high pastures had good grass, but it was too much work getting stock up to them and back down again when summer was over. 30 horsemen couldn't travel through those pastures without the grass getting beaten down. Not all of it had sprung back up again just yet, so Frank and Salty had no trouble following the trail. The terrain climbed in front of them and fell away behind them, so when Frank glanced back over his shoulder, he had a good view of the entire valley.
What do you reckon's gonna happen when they get to that line shack?
Embry'll charge it like the loco old buffalo bull he is, and the rest of his bunch will be right behind him. Brady and Baldridge and the men with him will open fire from behind, and I figure the rest of Baldridge's crew is hidden somewhere close by where they can start shooting too. Probably won't take long to butcher everybody from the Box D.
Frank, I don't want to say it, but I'm thinking maybe Ms. Wilcoxon has got something to do with this.
You're not telling me anything I don't already know, Salty.
If we can put a stop to this, what's going to happen to her?
I don't know. Right now, I just want to keep Embry and Hal and the rest of them from getting slaughtered.
Shh! We're too late! Damn it!
Maybe not. We gotta try and help them.
They called on their mounts for one last burst of speed. The animals thundered up a long slope. The ground leveled out into a pasture about 200 yards wide that stretched for twice that distance to a sheer cliff jutting up 100 feet or more. Rocky ridges flanked the pasture on both sides. At the far end of the pasture, near the granite cliff, stood the old line shack. It was built of logs with a stone chimney and appeared to still be pretty sturdy. A number of riderless horses milled around the shack. Frank recognized some of the Box D mounts. He didn't see Brady or any of the B-Star gunnies. Sensing that the situation wasn't exactly what he had expected to find, he reined in and motioned for Salty to do likewise. They stopped in the shelter of some trees at the entrance to the pasture.
What in blazes is going on here?
Salty and Frank watched as gray puffs of powder smoke spurted from behind boulders and trees on the ridges.
I figured we found Embry and the rest of the Box D bunch shot to pieces.
So did I.
Shots came from the windows of the line shack as well. Frank pointed to half a dozen dark shapes sprawled on the ground between them and the shack.
Looks to me like Embry or somebody else in the bunch must have figured out they were riding into an ambush. That line shack was the closest cover, so they lit out for it just before the shooting started. A few of them didn't make it, but most of the bunch did.
What about the kidnappers and those two gals?
They're probably never in the line shack to start with. That was just a ruse to get Embry and his men up here.
Where are the gals in?
Being held prisoner in Baldridge's house, maybe. We'll figure that out later. Right now, we've got the survivors from the Box D holed up in that shack, and Baldridge's hired killers up on the ridges trying to smoke them out.
What about us?
We're the wild card, Salty. Neither side knows we're here. It's up to us to even the odds a little.
Now you're talking. Where do you reckon Baldridge and Brady got off to?
We didn't meet them coming up here, so they must still be around. Chances are, when the trap didn't close all the way, they headed up on one of those ridges to throw lead at the line shack, too.
If we could get our hands on Baldridge.
I was thinking the same thing. Then we'd have a bargaining chip of our own. Come on, let's see if we can work our way around to that ridge on the right.
Staying in the cover of the trees where they weren't as likely to be noticed, the two men rode east. After a few minutes of making their way toward the ridge, Frank suddenly stiffened in his saddle as the smell of tobacco smoke drifted to his nostrils. Someone nearby was smoking a Quirly. He motioned for Salty to stop and dismount. After handing his reins to the old-timer, Frank started through the trees on foot, with the Winchester held slanted across his chest. He followed the smell of smoke until he came to a clearing where a dozen saddle horses were tied to bushes and saplings. Those mounts had to belong to Brady's men. The gun wolves had left him there to climb to the ridge and take their positions for the ambush. One man stood next to a tree, sucking on a Quirly as he kept an eye on the horses. His back was half turned toward Frank. With the stealth that his long, perilous life had taught him, Frank moved closer to the guard. The man was Vince Cotter, one of Brady's men. And the last time Frank had seen him, Cotter had been struggling with Katie Storm in the kitchen of the feed barn. Finding Cotter here watching over the horses was more evidence supporting Frank's theory of what had happened. Cotter and the other two gunmen must have taken Faye and Katie back to the B-Star. Probably they had never even come close to the line shack with the prisoners, and chances were Faye and Katie were locked up in the ranch house right now, and had been when Frank and the others were there earlier. If Frank had had any doubts about Laura's involvement with this murderous scheme, they were gone now, and Cotter was dead. which was good riddance as far as Frank was concerned. He left the gunman where he had fallen and hurried back to Salty.
What'd you find?
That one's down. More than a dozen to go, though.
Shoot. We got him outnumbered. Dang worms just don't know it yet.
They left Goldie and the Pinto with the killer's horses and started climbing the slope to the crest of the ridge. Wolf went with them, staying close to Frank now instead of ranging ahead as the big cur often did. The gunshot served to guide Frank and Salty once they reached the top. By following the nearest reports, they located one of Brady's men stretched out on top of a slab of rock as he fired down at the line shack. Frank and Salty were about 50 feet above him. Frank knelt and lined his sights on the man's back, but his finger didn't press the Winchester's trigger.
You don't want to drill that son of a buck in the back, do you? Even though he's got it coming?
I never have cared for back shooting.
We can fix that.
Before Frank could say anything else, Salty reached down, plucked a fist-sized rock from the ground, and chucked it at the gunman. The rock thudded hard into the man's back. He rolled over, bringing his rifle around with him, and as he spotted Frank and Salty, his eyes widened in surprise, and he tried to swing the repeater's barrel into line.
There you go. You didn't have to shoot him in the back. I call it a fair fight.
Let's go.
Again, the sound of gunshots guided them. They weren't going to be able to get to this man as easily, though. Instead of lying out in the open, he was concealed in a thicket of trees and brush. Frank couldn't get a clear shot at him from above.
I'm going to have to go down there.
Well, them pioneers on the ground, you're going to have a hard time getting close to them without making some racket.
I know, but I don't see any other way to do it.
Well, be careful. I'm a tough old bird, but I ain't going to be any match for that whole gang of killers all by my lonesome.
Don't worry. Here, hang on to this for me.
What are you going to...
Salty stopped as Frank drew the knife from the sheath on his belt.
Oh.
Frank moved into the trees and began his stealthy approach. He pressed his back to a tree trunk and slid around the pine. He caught a glimpse of a denim-clad leg through the undergrowth about 10 feet ahead of him. Branches and creepers clawed at him as he forced his way through the thicket. One of the branches caught on his shirt and suddenly snapped with a sharp crack. The unnatural sound caused the hidden gunman to turn. Lowering his head, Frank bowled his way through the brush and came out in the little open space where the killer had taken cover. Frank cleaned the blade on the dead man's shirt and slid it back into a sheath. Then he made his way out of the thicket to rejoin Salty. A grin wreathed the old-timer's whiskery face when he saw Frank coming.
Let's see if we can whittle down the odds a little more.